from ACV Radio Mainstream. Welcome to Tuesday Topics. Over the next hour, we will be discussing a topic of interest to persons who are blind or visually impaired. Now, from Miami, Florida, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
I am Paul Edwards from Miami, Florida, and it's a pleasure to be taping on an unusual evening, Thursday evening. After a nice long day at work, I left my house this morning at 7 and worked straight through till 8:30 this evening. So it's actually around 9:30 Eastern Time in a very pleasant Miami, Florida, where the temperature is about 63 degrees and weather is extremely nice. I'd like to begin by expressing my appreciation to Brian Charlson and Steve Bauer, our producers and recorders and editors, for all the efforts that they've put into Tuesday Topics this year. I'd like to remind everyone that we now do have an email address, which is tuesdaytopics@acbradio.org, and we would certainly enjoy hearing from folks if you have issues. I've also recently heard from ACB Radio that our Tuesday Topics archive project is actually coming along. So there is some likelihood that within the next month or so, with the kind work of Matthew Horoschool, we will actually begin to see Tuesday Topics archives begin to emerge, so that our back programs will actually be available for folks to listen to should they be minded to do so. Of course, we need to express our appreciation to George Byes, whose Talking Communities makes the software that we're using available. So, George, thank you so much, sir. We very much appreciate all of your efforts. As we approach the end of the year 2007, it occurred to us that it might be fun to bring the blindness community together to talk about what they thought were kind of the top 10 events in the blindness field that people felt ought to be either celebrated or deplored, depending on your point of view. So that's what we will be discussing this evening. Not too many of our regulars seem to have migrated to Thursday evening, but we'll see who materializes. In any event, we don't have any firm agreement among the three of us about what the top 10 issues are, so we will certainly attempt to talk about 10 different occurrences this year, and also to let you think about what some others might be. Perhaps we'll end up hitting more than 10 to see whether there are some items that we exclude that you would have put there. So I think that what I will do is pick on Brian as the first person in my sights to choose one of the top 10 elements and tell us what he thinks one of the top 10 events in the blindness field for the year 2007 might be.
Well, calling in this evening from less than spectacular weather conditions up here in Boston, where we just had our fourth snowfall of the season, another 6 inches today, so that the mounds of snow on either side of my front walk now reach my shoulder, I nonetheless have been giving some thought to the idea of what the big issues of the year have been for ACB and the blindness field in general. And I would say one of the things that needs to be placed in the pool is the concept of accessible voting. And here again, it's a mixed grade situation. I can honestly say I was excited to be able to participate in every election this year in an accessible form. Wasn't always easy. I remember the first time I went into a voting booth that had speech functionality to it, the difficulty in explaining the process I expected to go through with the actual people who staff the polls. gentleman came by with a card that he enabled the machine for me. However, the machine rested so low that you would get a real crink in your back going through everything, so I had to get them to find a chair for us, eventually put a chair in front of the machine, sat down, and cast the first of several ballots during the course of this year's elections. Unfortunately, by the time I stood up, I found out they had taped to the back of the chair for handicapped use. So I wasn't too thrilled with that part of things. And it did take me a little getting used to not being able to smoothly go through what turned out to be extremely lengthy descriptions of the ballot measures. But everything worked fine. I was able to print out my, if you will, final ballot and turn it in as appropriate. So I was not at all disappointed with that. So I think accessible voting has to be in the top 10 of the year.
And perhaps it might be of interest for me to talk about the other side of the coin. In Florida, we were early adopters of accessible voting, so it's almost become old hat for me to cast a ballot. About 2003, we actually began to put machines together, and by early 2004, places like Miami-Dade County were up and running. And we passed laws in Florida that actually made accessible voting something of a priority, which I was actually pretty proud of. Well, in 2007, we took an immense step backwards in that our legislature passed a vote that essentially said that these lovely machines that we had adopted in 2004 were no longer acceptable for voting, and that we had to have a paper ballot, and that we had to have some kind of a scanning system. And so for absolutely everyone in the state, the DREs that had been used in the previous election were declared to be null and void because it was alleged they weren't reliable, their votes couldn't be verified appropriately, and there had simply been too many instances in the opinion of the legislature where the DREs had caused elections to come out in ways that couldn't be appropriately measured, undervotes and not counted votes and a range of other things. And there were also beginning to be lots of pieces of evidence that said that it was reasonably easy to commit voter fraud. But the interesting thing was that what the state decided was that we had to have a paper ballot. We had to go to what amounted to scanned ballots in all of our counties. But the one group that was excluded from that were voters with disabilities who were allowed to continue to use DREs. So the idea was that even though the system was unreliable, inappropriate, didn't necessarily cast your ballot correctly, it was okay for people with disabilities to use them. So we in FCB regarded that as rather frightening and very sad, and we have been trying to see what we could do to get that system changed. In a few counties, we've actually been successful, but in many counties in 2008, we're going to be faced with the situation where machines that have been thrown out for everybody else are considered okay for people with disabilities, a kind of a frightening thought. So that, nevertheless, doesn't change the fact that it's still a hot-button issue and that accessible voting is still, in many states, a questionable exercise. What seemed to be a sure thing and absolute last year has now changed substantially so that accessible voting is a little more in jeopardy since we don't know, given the current machines, whether our votes will actually count. So there we are. We have a couple of other folks with us, and I think I'll invite Steve Bauer, see if he wants to add anything to the accessible voting thing or whether he even believes that it ought to be among our top 10.
Well, it should definitely be in the top 10, and for me it was very much a privilege to be able to go and vote using a totally accessible machine. And hopefully all of the states that do have issues and problems will indeed be able to resolve them, and we can continue to move forward on that matter. An item that I think should be on the list, and I guess selfishly I'm going to put it there, and that is the PDA or portable device such as the Icon, Braille Plus, the Victor Reader Stream, that family of products, I think is coming closer to providing just one more fantastic method or mode of accessing information that is helping to level the playing field. I know that with the Icon and the Braille Plus, work is being done to make them compatible to play the new NLS, the National Library Service, digital talking books, and qualified library patrons will be able to download those books right from the web and play them on one of these devices. The Victor Reader Stream already plays them. The Icon and the Braille Plus should be capable of doing that probably somewhere in the first quarter of the new year. What this means is access to information just continues to get better. Now, instead of waiting until a bi-monthly publication arrives and scouring through the listings and then submitting an order and waiting sometimes weeks or months for a particular book to arrive either in Braille or on cassette tape, one will be able to go onto the web to a secure website, do a search for books, and download said book and then play it right on your PDA type device. And I think this is a huge step forward. My only fear is that our fine feathered friends in Washington, who no doubt are way high up on a hill, and the air may be a little thin, may not cooperate and provide the funding necessary to fully roll the digital talking book program out. So technology being the new PDAs, my offering to be on the list.
So, Steve, you put two different sets of devices in there as a single item, and I don't disagree with you that there's some significant overlap, the whole concept of convergence where we are going less and less to single-purpose devices and more to multi-purpose devices, I think is a good one. Yesterday I had a visitor at my office at the Carroll Center Technology Building, and they came in and said, saw my laptop, my Braille Plus Icon, my Voice Sense, my PacMate, and my Victor Stream all out on the desk. They forgot to mention my accessible cell phone. They didn't notice my little Moovo, which is, again, an MP3 player that can play certain kinds of downloadable books and the like. I'm sitting there with all of these different devices I use to access information on a daily basis. But I'm looking forward to things like the Braille Plus Icon, bringing many of those together into a single device. I get up in the morning and hit a couple of buttons on that device, and because I'm a Bookshare member, it's not too long before I have the current editions of the 12 different newspapers that I subscribe to, scan a bunch of RSS news feeds, also have it go on and get me a dozen or so podcasts of interest to me in the day. And by the time I leave the house, I've got all this loaded with this information. And I'm not talking about a long period of time. It's maybe 20 minutes altogether that it spends collecting all of that information on my behalf. And then I can listen to it whether or not I am connected to the Internet. Though it is fun that it's wireless. And nonetheless, I do think it is a significant issue this year that there are so many options, so many people working on products that take into consideration our needs to be portable and have access to the issue becoming more and more a matter of what to read out of all the things that are available rather than what to read, having to scour to find anything worth reading.
Hello, everybody. This is Gary Wood. I think that's encouraging, these new portable devices, and it'll be even more so when we can get them all to work seamlessly together in one device. Like the other night, I was at the Level Star room that is involved with the software, and they use talking community software, and they were talking about this product, the Icon. They're saying that they have plans to put cell phone features inside the future icon, and also GPS technology is planned for being put into the icon as well.
Well, Gary, you're very correct. Those are things that are going to be future additions. Frankly, I have not yet become interested or excited about the ability to put a SIM card in the Braille Plus because the battery life is of concern, but the GPS would be nice. Brian, there's one other little W word that I think needs to be also be tossed out with items such as the icon and the Braille Plus, and that is when. When do we have time to read everything that we have access to? Suddenly, we have much more information available to us, and I find, like you, I subscribe to about a dozen newspapers, and I cannot even touch them all every day, but at least they are there. I'm having difficulty trying to keep up with stuff, and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's something that is going to take all of us a little effort to get into some time management to try to make our way through this sudden open window of opportunity to grab information that is available to us, which is really a pretty cool thing. As you mentioned, there are several devices. Some do more than others, but they're all kind of in one family, if you will. But I think the next year is going to be real interesting to see how all of this technology moves forward. But the one thing I have to say that I think is a real potential problem is the ability of people to find the necessary cash to purchase this equipment. If a person who is sighted wants to have a little handheld device to let them read books and things on, it's not going to be extremely expensive. There's an upfront cost, but then there's the cost of purchasing books to be read on a digital device and that type of thing. So there's pros and cons, but maybe there also needs to be some effort to find some funding sources to help make this kind of technology more available. And that's one of those $64,000 questions as to how to find the answer. And since I don't have $64,000, I don't know what the answer is.
I was having dinner with some friends the other day after going to an audio-described performance of Mamma Mia, which is a musical all based on ABBA's music. And we were talking about this, that, and the other thing. And you can imagine that when you get a bunch of blind and visually impaired people together over some pizza or whatever, technology comes up as a major topic. And it turns out that the people who made the predecessor, if you will, to the book port, I'm trying to blank on what its name is, are going to come out with a competitor to the Victor Stream. And one of its biggest features is it's going to be significantly less expensive than the Stream. And I think, again, whenever we can get two manufacturers competing for the same dollar, we're going to see, I think, improved features to draw us into their product as opposed to their competitor's product. But I think it also has the tendency to drive the price down on devices. The opposite, it can also be true. It can drive a good product out of the marketplace because they can't get enough buyers to cover the cost of their research and development. And I know the folks at Humanware, as they were developing the Stream, were concerned about keeping the price down as far as they possibly could, even to the point of not including some features that are possible to put into the device, but that would cause the device basic cost to them as the manufacturer to go up. So we have to watch those kind of things. But I do think that you'll see the ability to play NLS books available on less expensive devices. We're going to get to the certainly sub-$300 and perhaps even the sub-$200 market for those kinds of devices. And, of course, I'm excited about the possibility of the $1,400 Braille Plus icon to be able to do that, because it's just one more thing it will be able to do. I don't have to keep shoveling out money for single-purpose devices, but rather can add a little to the expense of something as the cash becomes available to me to get my device to do more than it used to do. The GPS is an example of that. I was kind of hoping that the GPS for the voice sense would come in a little much lower than it's been,
But nonetheless, we have a third, or rather, is it third? No, pardon me, fourth competitor in that market now, and I think that it will eventually drive the price of that technology down. I agree with you. Price is very much an issue. I worked out some statistics the other day, and pretty much worldwide, less than 1% of the blindness community have access to technology in the kind of way that we're talking about technology, at least. But I do think that the PDA and the small handheld digital device, if you will, has been a really important aspect of 2007 and deserves to be in our top 10 list. Part of that, I think, has to, or maybe a separate item, is I was pleased to read a post today, an email, that indicates the continuing funding resolution being passed by Congress, hopefully tomorrow, will include the a little over $12 million first funding round for the Digital Talking Book Project. We were in danger, since they were doing a continuing funding resolution, of having level funding for the year and postpone the whole thing a whole additional year. But that doesn't appear to be the case now, since it's built in to the continuing funding resolution. Once in a while, Congress does get it right.
It probably is a good idea to include the arrival in a meaningful way of digital talking books from NLS as another separate item in our top 10, because for the first time, fairly large numbers of blind and visually impaired people are actually now beginning to use digital books. I think that number will, of course, get huge next year when machines materialize. Also, I'm afraid that we will probably find ourselves a little slower in the emergence of large numbers of new books. But I think everyone was kind of surprised at just how many people were prepared to go out and buy their own device in order to start to access digital books. So I would certainly include in my top 10 the arrival of NLS digital books. I think it's absolutely one of the top 10 events of this year. Who would like to throw in another one?
Well, that was one that I was going to think of, but I was trying to think when the accessible currency issue come out. Was that in 07 or 06 when they started talking about accessible currency?
They certainly, the suit was certainly around in 06. My recollection is that that the initial decision was late last year as well, so it wasn't a 2007 event. Obviously, what is the ongoing fight for it. So, if we regard it as important, we could certainly include the potential for accessible currency as among our top 10 events. The fact that it is continuing to be a major issue and it is being fought out in the courts as we speak.
I think that it should be a potential thing to be still concerned about, and I'm surprised in a way that we haven't heard more about described narrative description of TV shows, where it seemed like there was a lot of energy involved in getting that into fruition a few years ago. To have all the networks and all the TV channels in the top 10 markets having the capability of doing audio-described programs.
Again, because of the nature of digitization of things, digital television, digital radio, going from the videotape to the DVD as a means of distributing movies, the whole thing of the DVR, the digital video recorder, kind of set-top box that allows you to record programming, but not necessarily in an accessible way. In fact, almost assuredly not in an accessible fashion. We tend to play a catch-up game in the blindness technology biz, catching up with what the general marketplace is doing, occasionally being able to piggyback on something. For example, when I talked about MP3 players. I wasn't talking about using something like an iPod because of the little screens that you have to interact with. They're quite inaccessible in terms of getting full functionality out of them. But there was a MUVO that didn't require the use of the screen, strictly required the use of buttons. There is the Zen Stone, and these again are both general marketplace products where the manufacturer decided that there were times when people just didn't want to look at a screen to do things. They wanted to push a go and a stop and a next and a previous and keep life simple and small. And we benefit, again, in a piggyback kind of fashion from that. I expect that as time goes on, that we'll see a similar process take place with things like DVRs and DVD technology. As they get more capacity in terms of space on one of those discs, there's going to be the necessary space to put voice navigation on it. That is, if the world doesn't try to squeeze 5 languages, 12 hours of outtakes for every 1 hour of a movie, and those kinds of things, as if those have that much entertainment value. I think we will be able to squeeze out our space, but it's going to take some serious advocacy over the course of the next several years, I think. Another item, again, dealing with access to information that I think is very significant in 2007, and that's the NIMAS process. This is where school systems are required when purchasing textbooks for K through 12 to only sign contracts with publishers who guarantee that they will get access to e-text files of those textbooks, which can be placed into a central repository down at the American Printing House for the Blind in a format that can be easily rendered into accessible formats such as speech, braille. I'm not sure that it extends to large print because of some of the copyright-related issues with that, but certainly marked up in such a way that it could be done if individuals choose or organizations choose to do that. I think that's very significant. As a person who went to college with a great number of my books provided to me by RFB in those days, now RFB and D, I couldn't imagine why it's taken this country so long to centralize the repository of textbooks for kids K through 12 rather than having so many books created on a one-time use basis. And not shared around. Now that e-files are possible and a format has been established, I think this is going to be the year people look back on as the watershed year.
From ACB Radio Mainstream, you are listening to Tuesday Topics. If you have comments about the show or a suggestion of a topic you would like to have discussed, send a message to TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. That's Tuesday Topics at acbradio.org. Once again, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
Second, I'd add the iPod Shuffle to the list of accessible devices because everybody's been so down on Apple, but the iPod Shuffle is an entirely accessible little device and is very much in the same category as MUVOs and other devices such as that one. And then I'm going to move to suggest that an item that we discussed earlier, this whole idea of the DVD, DVR, descriptive video, and the whole nine yards ought to be considered as one of our top 10 things, but ought to be regarded as negative. I think we have taken an immense number of steps backwards with regard to this issue, not only because of the emerging technology, but because of the degree to which the emergency technology is not seeming to jump up and down about assuring continued accessibility, even of captioning for folks who are deaf, which many of us thought was so firmly entrenched that it wouldn't be a danger. I think that this is on the top 10 list because it is significantly likely, from my perspective anyway, that we are going to find ourselves in a place where there will almost be a vacuum when we reach the point in 2009 when we are supposed to transition. Even when the government has provided some subsidies for the development of set-top boxes, one of the significant things that emerged when those began to come out was that they had initially not considered the needs of people with disabilities at all. So that's one of the things that's on my list. I'm equally, I'm afraid, Brian, prepared to agree with you that NIMAS belongs on the list, but I think that this has not been a year when NIMAS has, I think, accomplished very much, and this is largely because of the fact that we're fighting two wars. I think it's become extremely difficult to get federal funding for projects that are not directly related to Iraq or Afghanistan or veterans or others, and that NIMAS has been one of those casualties. The good news on the other side of that coin is that there was the first bill that at least talked about making post-secondary textbooks an issue at the congressional level. But again, I'm really concerned over the fact that this year, what we have seen is that many programs that we might have looked forward to getting some benefits from have either not been funded at all or have been funded at such low levels that change is extremely difficult. So I think one of the other things that we need to regard perhaps as one of the top tens, and I'll tie it directly to NIMAS and some other funding components, is the scarcity of money for individuals who are disadvantaged. That, for me, is one of the top 10 issues this year.
Well, one thing that could be in the top 10, there's a certain gentleman that wrote a white paper about rehabilitation for the blind and the importance thereof. I wonder if maybe that could be one of those.
It's an interesting one to include, Gary. I think certainly how services ought to be delivered to people who are blind has become a major item for debate. And I think this year saw a number of significant developments in that area, not only with the publication of this paper, which actually was adopted by the committee in December, but wasn't adopted by the ACB board till January, so in theory could be considered as one of the components of this year. But I think that it's equally significant that two things appear to be happening this year in that field. One of them is that some states, including my own, are beginning to mumble about the need to develop a great big huge super agency that would put all of disability issues into a single spot rather than continuing to operate separate agencies. At the same time, as we are continuing to see the expansion of the number of states that are appearing to embrace many of the ideas about rehabilitation for people who are blind that have come out of the philosophies and value systems of the NFB. And that's certainly a significant development and is going to have, I think, a pretty huge impact over time on how services are delivered to blind people. So perhaps rather than the white paper, I think the ongoing issue of how services ought to be delivered to blind people and the number of arguments that are occurring in that area certainly deserves to be on the top 10 list.
In general, the topic of rehabilitation is one of the top 10. I think it would be discouraging if they opted for the idea of a single purpose rehabilitation, lumping all of them together like sometimes they've talked about doing. And then also, as far as the NFB, that don't sound encouraging to me as an ACB member, but I think that some of the people, I mean, I've heard grumblings that some of the people that are, as they retire from the Kalamazoo Center, they're going to have more NFB people taking over, and then might lean more toward an NFB style rehabilitation center, which would be one that I don't believe I would support.
I think another area that we might think about for the top 10 list is the arrival of a website on the scene developed and implemented by the American Foundation for the Blind. And this is a website that is specifically designed to make information available for people who are older and are losing their vision. I think it's a huge step forward in drawing attention to the largest population of people who are blind. I think the site itself does a bunch of really good things, but hopefully perhaps more important than the site itself will be the degree to which it represents a centralizing force that can create a sense of what is needed more widely across the country because of not only the prestige but the effectiveness of the site and the work that's being done by the American Foundation for the Blind in Dallas, Texas, where the center on age, the Center on Aging and also the website on aging has emerged. I think that's among the top 10 because I think it's one of the first developments over the past few years to truly move the issue of serving older people who are blind to the forefront as a major component of service delivery.
I do think that there seems to be more and more interest in the issues of those who have visual difficulties as a result of aging. We are in the middle of a demonstration project dealing with low vision rehabilitation. Number of states, I think about 5 or so of them, states and regions, are demonstrating the doability of incorporating things like physical therapists and occupational therapists into the process associated with low vision and aging. And I think we're going to see some good things come out of that over time. It's still embarrassing to think how little money is spent on such a large portion of the blindness community, though. Clearly, way less money spent on the 50% of blind and visually impaired people over the age of 65 than on those younger than that. So I hope good things will happen in the future. I think the idea that AFB has taken and gone from their AFB.org to the senior site and now also a site for parents of blind and visually impaired children is indicative of what's happening in many rehab agencies or agencies dealing with blindness and disability across the country. And that's going to allow for more access to information, the how-tos of things, to those who aren't living in major metropolitan areas. I think that it's going to make it easier for the adult children of people who are losing their vision to get access to the information necessary for them to be involved in their parents' future as persons with vision loss. And that's a good thing as well.
I had a friend over the past week or two who has been trying to acquire a new cell phone through Sprint and has been notably unsuccessful in finding anything that is very speech-oriented or very accessible in the Sprint line, which brings me to something that I think may be significant as well, and that it's actually another thing that the American Foundation for the Blind has taken a leading role on, and that is to actually begin to encourage the filing of suits under Section 255. While there certainly have been some complaints in the past, I think this is one of the few times where we have actually gone forward and attempted to very clearly identify a population and a series of problems with some proposed new remedies that will eventually make cell phones better. It becomes relevant to mention Sprint because they are, in fact, the provider of cell phone service that has been sued. I think it's significant only, not so much because of the case itself, but because it represents one of the first times over the past several years that the blind population as a whole has come together and truly tried to move into an area of litigation, whereas in the past I think there might have been a tendency for us to simply sit back and say, oh well, maybe it'll get better in time. So for me, it is the decision that litigation is the only viable answer that is significant. And the same kind of thing has happened in special education, where this year there have actually been a couple of court cases where the idea inherent in IDEA, no pun intended, of there being a continuum of services has actually gotten some pretty significant airplay. And it was decided, in fact, in a couple of these cases, that the creation of separate schools for some populations of kids with disabilities is the most appropriate way to provide them with mainstream services. And I absolutely applaud that, since it focuses attention on the need to find the services that work best for all people with disabilities, not the services that seem to be philosophically the most appropriate. Steve, would you like to add another component to our list?
This is one I've thought about, and it may have really started before 07, but I think came more into the spotlight or the window of opportunity in 07 than any other previous year, so I'm going to throw it out anyway. And that is hybrid vehicles and the hazard that they present in regard to mobility for persons who are blind or visually impaired. The silent car.
I think the other significant thing about the hybrid car controversy is the degree to which car companies don't appear to be very eager to try to find a solution. Perhaps another thing that belongs on the top 10 list is something that we've talked about on this program as this year has gone on, but that is the erosion of respect for people with disabilities. I believe that in legislatures and in among employers and in various parts of virtually every community in the United States, the degree to which simply having a disability would entitle you to a degree of respect, to at least the potential for some funding and so on, was significantly greater a few years ago. And I think that now, in the year 2007, we're finding a good deal more hostility to our issues than I'd personally ever seen before. And I think that's got to do with the barrage of inappropriate media stories that have occurred over the last decade, as well as the arrival of an increasingly conservative Supreme Court. Who'd like to throw out another one?
Brian here. I do think that there has been an erosion of the anticipated or commonly expected respect and concern on a community basis for the issues associated with disability. I saw a number of emails over the course of the past couple of weeks that were actually responses on blogs to initially good articles on the subject of universal design, that the responses from bloggers were downright hostile to the idea. You know, I read one where the person actually said, for heaven's sakes, they're handicapped. Of course they can't have access to this kind of thing. We just need to accept the fact that there's not enough of them to make it a commercially viable thing. And in fact, if it were commercially viable, companies would jump on it to make money. That kind of an attitude. So I think you're right that there is a significant amount of erosion there. There's I think something that deserves to be on the list. I think there's a growing interest on the part of boards of directors, boards of trustees, of blindness-related agencies, I'm talking about private agencies now, to give serious consideration to qualified blind people as executive directors of those agencies. And I'd point to CNI as a great example of that, but by no means the only example of that, where they placed a graduate in as the CEO of the CNI And a similar thing is taking place at one of the nation's largest industries programs, the Seattle Lighthouse for the Blind, will, on the first of this year, have a blind director.
I think that's a good point. We're running a little out of time, or I would have spent some more time on that issue. I think there are certainly some significant issues surrounding it. From an ACB perspective, I think that we ought to include perhaps the changing of the guard, that is, the election of a new president of ACB and the emergence of a new set of officers within ACB. I think that's already begun to have some impact, and we'll have to see over time just how much impact it actually has. But I think that we're already beginning to see the membership of ACB reaching out to our new president to try to create opportunities for assistance. And I believe that for those of us in ACB, we ought to consider this one of the major developments of this year. I think another one that perhaps deserves to be on the list that concerns ACB Radio is the launching of ACB World. It's an interesting issue to me because it does fulfill a promise that President Chris Gray certainly talked about for a lot of the time that he was in office, and that is beginning ACB Radio into other languages. Now we've actually begun to do that, and we do have several languages that are broadcasting on ACB World. And I think that can only broaden ACB Radio's impact. And while we're talking about that, I think I would also include among the top 10 things the extension of ACB Radio, or the reaffirmation of the extension, if you like, of ACB Radio into the area of international live broadcasting. The conference of the European Blind Union and earlier the Africa Forum were both broadcast on ACB Radio. And I think this is a significant development. In that it allows blind people all over the world to have access to the deliberations of their fellows, not only in the United States, but in the world. And I think that this is going to, in the long run, have a significant impact on the emergence of movements of the blind in developing countries. At least I hope it will, and think it will. Another thought, Mr. Bauer, Mr. Charlson?
I'm not sure that I'd put it down for this year, but it's a serious, serious issue that we've got to deal with, and that is the digitization of home appliances. Every friend I have that had to go out and buy a stove, a refrigerator, a new washer and dryer, those types of what we used to call white goods, struggled this year to find anything that they could use, even a portion of the features that they were paying for. In many cases, they had to choose to buy used products rather than new products, or buy the low end of a product line in order to have any level of accessibility to the product at all. And that, I think, while we talk about things like described movies and theater and these kinds of things, and that does matter in terms of bringing those with disabilities into the culture of our society, the independence of people in their homes is at risk as a result of this development of products that we're dependent on in our homes.
I think that this should be one of the top 10 issues because described videos are important, but being able to run the darn appliances that we have, knowing how to do that and the frustration when we can't because of the digitization and not being able to see whatever screen that they've got there for anyone to see how to run something. I think it's very important.
We are nearing the end. Perhaps we can take one other quick round to see whether folks have another item that they would like to add to the list, or indeed suggest that some of the items that we've put here don't in fact belong. So let me start with Brian. Do you have one more for us, Brian?
I don't have anything new. I do think that it's very easy for us as we sit here to point out the negative side of things. And I don't think this year was entirely negative. I think the biggies of things happening at Bookshare, things happening at APH, at AFB, at ACB, now there's some good reasons for some optimism with the movement in those organizations in particular. They all get our loyalty and or our tax dollars to do what they do, and it feels good to know that they're doing a lot of the right things in our name. I get really frustrated when entities ask for my money to support them simply because they're blindness related. I like to give my money to those who I feel are making a positive difference not only in my lives but in the lives of the people that I care for. I think there's, like I say, cause for optimism in the behaviors of many of these, especially the private not-for-profits.
Mr. Bauer, a last issue that you'd like to throw on the table or final comments?
I don't really think it's an issue. I think it's something that, for me anyway, has come to the forefront during this past year, that in light of all of the things that are going on, whether it be legislative, whether it be ACB-related, or product development related, whatever the case may be, the things that affect our lives as blind people, it is our responsibility, and it's becoming more and more evident that we need to take a positive role and the initiative to stay informed, to be learning about what's going on, and to be prepared to take action if necessary. And I think this past year has brought several issues to the forefront that have proven the fact that it's up to us to take the initiative to learn, to ask questions, and to take action when necessary. And we should not sit back and wait for someone to guide us or ask us. It's up to us to step up and be informed citizens and to be prepared to take action if necessary. And whatever that action is, just doing research, providing input, voting, whatever the case may be, if it's an element or a factor that affects our quality of life, then it's up to us to take the initiative to get in there and be educated and prepared to take that action if necessary. And I think this last year has just proven on many cases that being prepared to take that initiative to learn more has been brought out front, and it's more evident that we need to do it. Even more so in the new year.
I couldn't agree with you more, Steve. I actually think that one of the issues that has really emerged this year is the need for people with disabilities to stand up and be counted. There are two other things that might deserve to be on the top 10 list, and we don't have a lot of time, so I'm going to throw them out relatively quickly. One of them is a decision that was made earlier this year by the city of San Francisco to make an overarching commitment to the installation of accessible pedestrian signals. There have certainly been some smaller towns that have come close to taking this action, but I think that San Francisco is the first city in the United States of any huge size to announce a real commitment to an idea in principle. There are other cities, Miami being one of them, where we are seeing the slow installation of a few accessible pedestrian signals, but they're hard to make happen and not easy. And the second significant issue, and I think a good one, is the emergence into Congress in August of what amounts to an ADA Restoration Act. I think that it is significant that people with disabilities this year had the courage to join with others to try to make the ADA as strong as Congress intended it to be, rather than allowing it to continue to erode as it has over the past several years. I think that we certainly are not to the point where we have a final answer with regard to that issue. But I think it is significant, rather than being frightened of the consequences, that there are enough of us who really did begin to make an impact with regard to the ADA Restoration Act. Let's see if anyone has one final comment. If you do, so be it. Otherwise, we shall draw the curtain down on another exciting Tuesday Topics Recorded Thursday.
Well, I think I agree with Steve in a lot of ways. I think that too often we wait for the government to take control. We want the government to do all this for us, but we've got to do it for ourselves, stand up for ourselves, and maybe that's the only way things are going to get done if we do that, you know, just stand up for our rights to have the things that we need to have done.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've heard some of what we believe to be the most important events of this year. I wasn't even keeping count, so I can't even tell you if we actually reached 10 in the specifically identified components. We probably left some out, insofar as you're concerned. Why not drop us an email at TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org and let us know what specific things that happened this year you believe we should have included that we didn't. We'll certainly share your ideas on a future program, as well as making your emails available, assuming that they're worth reading, and I'm sure they will be, to other folks as you discuss ideas that are antithetical or different than those that we put forward. If, in your view, by the way, we've been unfair to groups and we need to be chastised because of our lack of objectivity, by all means, send us, and we'll talk about it on our next program. Tuesday Topics is, in fact, going to think about taking 2 weeks off to celebrate Christmas and New Year's. So we will return 2 weeks from tonight with a new program. In the meantime, on behalf of the whole Tuesday Topics team, I want to wish everyone happy holidays, great Kwanzaa and Christmas and Diwali and all of the other holidays that get celebrated at this time, including Hanukkah. And I look forward to talking with everyone after the beginning of the new year. So on behalf of Tuesday Topics and the old year that passes, remember, on ACB Radio, you find out about things years ahead of others.
And that's Tuesday Topics for this week. To participate in the recording of Tuesday Topics, we invite you to join us on Tuesday evenings in the U.S. at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's 2 hours universal on Wednesday. The program is conducted in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. That's ourplace.acbradio.org. All you need is a microphone that is plugged into your computer's sound card. A few minutes before each program begins, those who are online will be happy to assist with audio checks and to answer any questions you may have about the chat room client. An announcement about the show, including the topic to be discussed, will be sent out early each week to the ACB Radio Friends List. If you have comments about the show or a suggestion of a topic you would like to have discussed, send a message to TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. That's TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. So we hope you will come and join us each week on Tuesday when Tuesday Topics is recorded. We'll look for you in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. Tuesday Topics is a production of ACB Radio Mainstream.